Welcome to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. Get Your Barbecue On is a show for backyard cooks looking for tips and insight into barbecuing, grilling, entertaining, and enjoying themselves outside with delicious food. Each week, we'll share some barbecuing and grilling tips, techniques, recipes, and a few pitmaster secrets you just have to know. Every show will feature fun, interesting, and informative guests. And we'll also answer listener questions. Please send your questions to getyourbbqon@gmail.com or visit our website at kenshardwoodbbq.com and click radio show. Hey, welcome to today's show. I'm here with the doctor. He's joining me today, co-host, and we have a very, very awesome show. We have a great guest. Sadie Shaw is going to be on the second half of the show. She is a community activist, and she is running for the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board.
Yes.
Sadie is a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And she is motivated. And she's going to do a great job on the school board. And I'm really looking forward to the elections coming up in a few days. And if you haven't already voted and you live in the Tucson Unified School District, please go out and vote for Sadie.
I agree.
All right. So today, Doctor.
Yeah.
Dr. Andre Jones.
Yes, sir. What are we talking about?
We're talking about pork bellies.
Pork belly.
So a pork belly is basically the underside of a hog. And you know pork belly best by its bacon.
Bacon.
Everything goes well with bacon.
Fish and maple flavored bacon. I'm salivating just thinking about it right now.
Wow. And you know, the thing about pork bellies.
Yeah.
They are traded on, pork belly futures on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Really?
Yeah. So you can invest in pork belly futures.
That is probably not a good idea to tell me this right now, because that is exactly what I'm investing in.
Yeah, you can put your money in pork bellies.
The future of bacon is depending on me right now.
Yeah. Because normally they store them. And they store them frozen for extended periods of time until they deliver them to customers. But you can basically invest in pork belly futures. You just bet on the price of pork bellies.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I'm calling my financial advisor.
Yes, sir. Put all my money in pork bellies.
Exactly. Because that's not going anywhere.
Right. And send me some of them.
And send me some, please. Immediately. I got some grilling to do this weekend.
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about pork bellies. The pork belly that we're talking about, we're going to talk about uncured pork bellies. So bacon is cured, usually with salt or sugar.
Right.
That's what they use to cure bacon.
Okay.
We just want plain old raw uncured pork bellies.
Where do we find that?
You can find them at local meat markets.
Okay.
Or here in Tucson, you can also find them at some of the restaurant supplies.
Really?
And there's one restaurant supply in Tucson called Merit Foods. They do sell to the public. So you don't have to have a business license or you have to be a restaurant or anything. And you can go to Merit Foods and they do carry pork belly if you want to buy a pork belly. But otherwise, there are some meat stores around town, meat markets around town, and I'm pretty sure you can find pork bellies there.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, again, when you go there, you're looking for the uncured pork belly.
Yeah.
And so pork bellies, you can get them with skin on or skin off. I prefer to cook pork bellies with the skin off. And you know what pork skin is, pork rinds.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah.
So if you cooking a pork belly with the skin still on, well, one of the things you do is you want to prepare it in a way that you want to crisp up that skin. But I mean, we could talk about that, but we're going to talk about the skin on. So if you get a pork belly with skin on, then you can just take a sharp knife and you could just cut the skin right off. Just trim it right off.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where you find a pork belly. We're looking for a center cut pork belly. And we want to want about 4 pounds.
Wow.
About 4 pounds. And it'll be about an inch to an inch and a half thick.
That'd That's a lot of meat.
Yeah, well, it'd be the perfect pork belly
yeah.
for us.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I mean, you don't have to eat it all in one sitting.
Nope. Got it. Okay. Got it. Okay.
I mean, you can cook part and you can freeze part. Right. Or whatever you want to do.
I have teenage girls at home. I don't know if it's
right,
going to last.
Right. And so that's where you find it. You find it at a local meat market, restaurant supply.
Yeah.
How do you prep a pork belly?
Yeah.
So first thing you need to do is come out, well, what flavor profile do you like? Now, you just mentioned maple.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's some maple seasoning, some flavors, whatever. So I typically use a sugar based on my pork bellies.
Oh.
And that's because of what I want to pair it with.
Okay.
All right. Because typically I'm going to take my pork belly once it's done and I'm going to use it and eat it with something else. I might want to put it on a sandwich. I could put it on a burger. I could put it on, you know, around the restaurant. We might put pork belly on a pulled pork sandwich or just other types of things. Or you can just eat the pork belly by itself.
Wow.
So
it's like an addition, really.
It's an addition. Doesn't have to be. Usually you find pork belly around town. Most people sell it as an appetizer.
Oh.
Right. And some of the fancy restaurants, you could go and they'll have it on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And I typically try it because I'm that kind of guy.
Right.
You know, I like to try, you know, I see
yes,
pork belly and I say, hey, man, pork belly on the menu. Let's try this.
Sure.
But typically I'm disappointed because places that it doesn't have any flavor.
Really?
Yeah, it's just straight pork without seasoning, more or less. And so that's been my experience. And so prepping the pork belly. I would say get you a nice rub together.
Oh.
Yeah. Figure out what. And that's why I said I like to use a sugar-based rub. So I'll take brown sugar, kosher salt, and then I'll add a few other little spices in there.
Mm.
And then I just take that pork belly without the skin on, and then I just rub that baby down.
Mm.
And just rub, put that rub on there. And then take it and put it in plastic wrap. So I'll wrap it up real good. And I let it sit in the refrigerator overnight.
So plastic wrap, not aluminum foil or anything.
No, not aluminum foil. I usually take like, you know, they've got brand names, but I won't use any. But
take
the plastic wrap, seal it all up.
Yeah.
And then just put it in the refrigerator, let it sit overnight, let all that, you know, get in there real good.
Mm.
Those spices get in there real good.
Mm.
I mean, and so you could spice it up a little bit, whatever.
Yeah.
You just come up with whatever flavor profile you want. Mm. Just make your rub with that. I mean, you could be a barbecue flavor profile. Whatever you want your, say, pork belly to taste like, you just do it, put in a rub, put it overnight.
Yeah.
Next day, pull that baby out and it's ready to go.
Wow. All right.
And so, like I said, rub it liberally with those spices, wrap it up, put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
And then also, I want you to consider using, you know, we talked about a spritz a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
So when we're smoking, you know, cooking this pork belly, every now and then we want to get in there and spray it with a little something. Some people like to use apple juice, or you could come up with, you know, any other kind of flavor or seasonings that you want and put in this liquid and spray. So you can take apple juice and water. Because they want that apple flavor I mean, and a lot of people like to use apple juice when they're cooking pork.
Okay.
Yeah. They like to use apple juice when they're cooking pork. So anyway, so I come up with a little spritz and we can use apple juice or like, and it'll go good with what I'm talking about. I got this brown sugar sweet kind of thing and to throw some apple in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at that point, what we're doing is we're just building flavor. You know, we're just layering these flavors on this pork belly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, so the next thing you know, let's get our grill ready.
Yeah.
So our grill or a smoker. And so today we're going to be using indirect heat.
Oh, really?
Because some people, and I don't know what kind of instrument you have or what kind of equipment you have at home.
Yeah.
But I mean, most people, but you can do this on a gas grill or you can do this on your smoker.
Oh.
And most smokers are indirect heat anyway.
Right.
Or if you have a grill, that's a charcoal grill, whatever, we're going to go indirect on it.
Okay,
so we're going to set it up for indirect heat, and our cooking temperature is going to be 225 degrees.
Interesting.
Right, so we're going to use 225 degrees. Mm-hmm. Now, the target meat temperature when it's done.
Yeah.
And I'd say anywhere from 190 to 200 degrees. Oh. And that's where you want to pull this baby off.
That's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, it is. So when you say pork is ready at 145,
yeah,
normally a lot of people go a little higher than that, right. But it's going to be really tender. It's going to be, and you know, the fat's going to be rendered.
Yeah.
But it's a good temperature to take off this pork belly.
Okay. All right.
You know, this cut of meat. So 190 to 200 degrees.
Okay.
Right in there. And so now we come up with, do we wrap it or don't wrap it?
Yeah.
And to me, it just depends on what kind of equipment I have. If I'm doing it on a grill, then most likely when I'm going to wrap it.
Right.
And so I would take it at about 165 degrees, pull it off, take some aluminum foil. I'm going to spray it down really good with the spritz.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to wrap and seal it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to throw it back on the grill until it gets to that target temperature, 190 to 200 degrees. Now, and if I had a smoker, like a lot of times on my smoker, I won't wrap. You know, I mean, I watch a lot of barbecue competitions. Some people wrap, some folks wrap, some don't.
Right.
It just depends on you, your style, and skill, I guess. Right. But you can try it both ways. You can test it, wrapped or not wrapped. But anyway, if I have a smoker, I'm probably not going to wrap it. I'm going to keep it and get it up to 190, 200 degrees. But right before it gets done, sort of like in the last 15 minutes on the grill.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to add barbecue sauce, and I know how you love that
sweet teriyaki
barbecue sauce. If you want to add that to your pork belly, all you do is about 10 to 15 minutes before it's done, before it's going to reach that target temperature where you want to take it off, open it up, just wipe it on, put that barbecue sauce on there, and then put it in, and then letting that and then you put it back in there for about 10, 15 minutes, letting that barbecue sauce tighten up, and then you pull it out.
Okay.
And take that pork belly out, let it rest for about 15 minutes.
I was about to ask,
about 15 minutes.
All right.
And then the baby's ready to go. Now, one of the things I like to do with my pork belly,
is
I like to use it for sandwiches, and either by itself or, like I said, you could put it on like a burger or something like that.
In addition to
some other type of sandwich where you would typically use bacon or something like that. Or like a, you know, most like a roast restaurants, a lot of the restaurants use it as an appetizer.
Wow.
And it's a great appetizer, but this would be a fantastic appetizer because it's got so much flavor packed into it. Right. Oh. Right. So, and then if you add your little teriyaki barbecue sauce right there, it'll be heavenly.
Absolutely.
Heavenly.
And have that every day for breakfast. Oh my gosh.
So one of the things is you cut it in, you know, some nice thick slices.
Yeah.
And then you can throw it on a grill or you can throw it in the skillet.
Perfect.
And then you could like, what you do is, you know, you render that fat a little bit, get it a little crispy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not too crispy or whatever.
Right.
And man.
Oh.
It is wonderful.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like bacon for days.
Bacon.
I don't have to go out and go get bacon. I can make my own little bacon, my own little piece. I bet you my daughters wouldn't even know the difference.
But yeah, that's what you do with a pork belly.
Oh, wow.
And so.
That sounds scrumptious. Like, seriously, I'm ready to try it on.
All right. I'll be looking forward to hearing you about this trying this pork belly. And it is something that you could do on your grill at home.
Hey, I'm doing it.
All right.
I'll do it.
Pork the doctor and the pork bellies.
Absolutely.
All right. All right. Well, hey, it's time for us to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to answer a listener's question. And then we're going to check in with the doctor. Dr. Andre Jones, our pit master in training. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back from the break. This is Get Your Barbecue On, the podcast with Ken Alexander. I'm here with the doctor, Andre Jones.
That's right.
And it's that time of the show where we answer a listener's question. Dr. Jones.
Yes, sir.
What's the question today?
All right. So the question comes from Richard from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, it snowed this week in Santa Fe.
It did?
Yeah.
Wow.
The cold spell here in Tucson gave them a snowstorm in New Mexico and in Colorado, too.
Wow.
So hopefully he is above the snow. He said that he has a family of about 10 to 12 people who come over.
What?
Every weekend.
Okay.
And he's looking at his grill. He's looking for like a new grill. I'm guessing that he's put the grill away. And he wants to know what grill should he get for cooking 10 to 12 people.
All right. So he needs a bigger grill.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the barbecue business, like some other things, size does matter. So I'm assuming a gas grill. He's talking about
gas grill is what he said.
Gas grill. And if he's needing, he thinks he doesn't have enough grill space.
Yeah.
Then he probably has like a two burner grill.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's looking, and you said about 10 or 12 people,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, you know, he could go to 3 to 4, but four burner grill. So I'm saying that if he had like a four burner grill, gives him more space.
Yeah.
And it also gives you more versatility.
Oh, really?
With a four burner grill, because it's easier to set up indirect.
Oh, right.
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 So you can set up and you'll have more space. You can set up the indirect cooking.
Right.
So with 10 to 12 people, if he has like, and you're going out looking for a new grill, and there's a lot of different types out there.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to gas grills, you know, my preference is one of those infrareds.
Yep.
Yeah. Because they tend not to spark up.
Right.
You know,
right.
Flame up as much as your typical gas grill.
Yeah.
But I think a four burner
mm-hmm.
For the anywhere from 8 to 12 people.
Yeah.
Would be fine
nice.
And give you enough space to get all your dishes cooked and everything.
Yeah.
Four burners on a gas grill would be great.
Nice.
Now, if you want to really get into some heavy duty parties or whatever,
uh-oh.
And you got like maybe 20 people coming or more like that.
Yeah.
Then you can think about, I mean, if you're doing it often.
Right.
Then you could think about, you know, because they even have the 5 burner, 6 burner.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah. I've got like at the house, I have a 54 inch.
Whoa.
Yeah. Grill. It's got 5 burners. Nope. 6.
6 burners.
6
wow.
burners. Yeah. And it can do rotisserie, all kinds of stuff for the gas grill.
Oh, but, that's awesome.
Yeah. But unless you're doing like some huge parties, you don't need one that big. So.
Right.
My answer is get a four burner gas grill. There's a bunch of them out there. Just kind of do your research.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm looking here at going like, okay, hashtag goals for Andre. Yeah, that's what he needs, a four burner grill.
All right.
So there you go, Richard. Get a four burner grill. If you're going to do it, hopefully you're going to grill some more before the season ends and winter is full blown. So that's what Ken recommends.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Well, it's that time for us to check in with our grill master in training, the doctor, Dr. Andre Jones. What's been happening at the Jones abode on the grill?
Well, let me tell you, and I'll tell you in story form.
Fantastic.
Awesome, because we can only do this part in story form. So it was Sunday night, and I wanted to grill something. And this is just a fun story of just like mishap all over the place. However, there is a miracle that happened.
A miracle.
During the show. Yes, during this part. Yeah. So I decided that I was going to grill some chicken. It's been a little while since I grilled chicken.
Okay.
And so, or no, it was hamburgers, because last week I did chicken. So I was like, I'm just going to do some burgers. You know, I just feel like a quick burger. I don't really want to think too much. Mm. And really, actually, so you remember how, you know, it was right before we went straight podcast.
Right.
And I kind of took over the show a little bit. And
yeah,
I told you.
I remember that time.
Yeah. And I was like,
you were a host.
I was.
The second half of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even asked you, I was like, hey, if I did a good job, you think I can have my own show?
Right.
And you're like,
right.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So I went off and I actually created my own show called All About the Wind Podcast.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It was very stressful getting the episodes done. So, and this probably adds to my hamburger story. So I'm listening to the shows. By the way, you're one of our guests and it was a really good show, by the way.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Hey, but before you go on, All About the Wind Podcast, how do I hear it?
Oh, you can hear All About the Wind Podcast by going to www.allaboutthewindpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can find us on Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Wow. All About the Wind Podcast with Dr. Andre Jones and friends.
All right.
Yeah. Great. Available today.
I look forward to it. I'm going to check it out later today.
Absolutely. You should. So I'm listening to episodes, and like I said, I'm feeling like a hamburger. And I go, I light up the grill. Everything's fine. Life is good. And I put the burgers on the grill. And, you know, even before, I prepped the burgers right before, you know. I am still using the frozen burgers. I promise you, I'm eventually going to move up to, like, making the burgers. I'm getting there.
You prepped the frozen burgers.
Yeah, I prepped the frozen burgers. Okay. Exactly. Okay. I prepped them good. Okay. You know, and I really wanted to put oil on them so that way they don't stick. That was the biggest thing. I didn't want them to stick on the grill.
Okay.
So, yes, this is my logic. going on. So, I get the burgers. I put them on the grill. And I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. And I went and I'm listening to the show. I go to cream soda and I'm still listening to it on my headphones. Mm. And I go to flip over the burgers and they're sticking to the grill. Hmm. I'm like, what in the world? Why is it sticking to the grill? And I turn them over and they look weird. They look like burgers, but they also look something a little different. Okay. I'm like, okay. And it's smelling a little different also. I'm like, it's not the normal hamburger smell. And these are fresh burgers. Yeah. So finally the burgers get done. And again, I'm having problems like getting them off. I put cheese on them before I got them out. You know, that's my favorite thing to do is put the cheese on it right before. Mm-hmm. I put them out and then I get a bun and I take one bite of it. And I'm like, this tastes like a little bit of the chicken that we had last week with burger.
Yeah.
So I had a chicken burger. Chicken is what I'm burger. Calling it. Yes, yeah. A chicken burger.
Did it still have some of that barbecue sauce you like to
it
put on
did.
The chicken?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. So it's this chicken sweet teriyaki barbecue sauce burger is what I created without thinking. But however, as I'm eating this burger and listening to the show, I hear something outside and I rush outside and I'm like, well, what's that sound? And I look and it's the water sprinklers. However, I look at the grill. I left it on by accident. So it's like all the way over at 600 degrees and I open it up and like everything is charred. Just charred. So I turn it off real quick and thankfully it was a cool night. So it cooled down really, really fast. Thank goodness for that. So the next day I was like, okay, well, I'm going to grill something else. I should probably clean it up because I wanted a Hebrew National, but I'm like, I'm not going to have charred Hebrew National. That just wouldn't be a good thing. So
hamburger, I get some chicken char
with sweet teriyaki sauce somewhere in there. So I get some Dawn and I fill up the water with, you know, hot water and I fill it up. I throw the grates in there and it like the water just turned instant black.
Wow.
Like instant black. And I'm like, oh, that's just nasty. So I clean them off real good. I put it back on. I have a Hebrew National, worked out good. Yeah, but now I have a clean, and then I cleaned it off of that. So now I have a clean grill that I can go off. But however, as all that was happening, as that night, that Saturday night when I was listening to the show and trying to get everything going, when I was looking for my spatula, guess what I found?
What?
My digital meat thermometer.
Get out.
Yes. Get finally. Out. Finally. It's been 2 weeks. And all it was upside down in a drawer. Mm. So I just moved it to the place where it's supposed to be. I am so happy to find that. Because earlier that day, I almost bought the Bluetooth thermometer that you just stick it in there and you just wait. And I was like, no. I need to find my digital meat thermometer first. But now since I'm going to be doing pork belly,
right,
I actually go and get it just to try it out and see how it works.
Yeah, pork belly. Back. Right, you got pork belly. You got some other big meats that you need to cook.
Yeah. And it'd be kind of nice to kind of like, you know, plug it in and right. kind of let it go and then set the time.
Look at your phone.
Exactly. And there's a way that you can set the temperature you want it, so it will alert you when it gets to that temperature.
Wow.
So I'm really thinking I want to play around with that this weekend.
All right.
I'm really thinking.
The doctor is going to incorporate some technology.
I know. Watch out. I don't know what I'm going to cook.
All right.
So that was my adventure for this week. This weekend, it's pork belly, it's hamburgers with lettuce wrap, grilled lettuce, and I found some thyme. Oh my gosh, that was a hard thing to find.
Well, I mean, are we talking about fresh thyme or dry thyme?
Fresh thyme.
All right.
That is so hard to find, but I found some, finally.
Well, I mean, if you go to a couple places, you can get it. One is Whole Foods, or it's always going to get fresh thyme. And
yeah.
Also Sprouts, you can
oh,
find
yeah.
fresh thyme.
That yeah. makes sense. Finally mm-hmm. found some, so I'm happy. And
just in time.
Huh? Exactly. Exactly. So I'm excited for this weekend.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Jones, our grill master in training.
Absolute.
All right. So it's time for us to take a break now. But when we return, we have the community activist here, Sadie Shaw.
Woo!
Sadie is running for the TUSD, that's Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. And elections coming up here very soon.
Yeah,
a couple of days. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Sadie Shaw. See you in a minute. So welcome back to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. I'm here with the doctor.
Uh-huh.
And we have an amazing guest on today. Sadie Shaw, community activist, and she is running for the TUSD school board.
Mm-hmm.
That is a wonderful. The election is in a few days, and so we're really pulling for Sadie. Sadie, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely our pleasure. Tell us a little bit about your journey here in Tucson. Are you from Tucson or what?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Tucson. So, you know, this is all I know, really. Yeah, and really, I never thought that I would be going on this whole venture of campaigning and, you know, trying to be elected into an office position. So, yeah, it's exciting and it's, you know, nerve-wracking. But, you know, it's all for the community.
Right, right. For community.
Yep.
So you say you came up here in Tucson. Where'd you go to school?
I went to school in the Amphi School District.
Amphi,
so, yeah,
huh?
Amphi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did you live over near Amphi, the area, or is it?
I mean, sort of. You know, Amphi is kind of centrally located. Mm-hmm. So I grew up a little bit north of Amphi. But yeah, you know, I have sort of like I have two homes. You know, my parents got a divorce kind of early on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of my time growing up, especially before I went into school, you know, was spent in Sugar Hill.
Okay. Sugar Hill neighborhood.
Yeah, at the Northwest Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Northwest Center now, the Donna Ligon
right.
Center.
Yeah, I knew it at the Northwest Center.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, before they did all the, you know, improvements. And so, yeah, I was a little kid growing up there. My dad was a volunteer at the Northwest Center feeding the seniors. So, yeah, I was, you know, a little kid running around the hallways and bothering all the old folks and watching Price is Right.
Yeah. No, my mom, she's fed the homeless for many years, and kind of the same thing as, you know, seeing her do her thing and giving back to the community. So did your dad giving back to the community and doing that, did it have any influence on you, the things that you do today?
I think it did. I mean, I know it did. At the time, I didn't really understand. I didn't know he was, you know, it was a volunteer position. It was
mm-hmm.
just something that he did every day, went down there and we tag along. And so, you know, I knew growing up that like the neighborhood was a place where he and his family grew up. And like you could tell just walking around the neighborhood or even driving around in the area that like everybody knew each other, you know what
wow.
I mean? So we'd drive down the neighborhood and he'd see his friend outside and, you know, we'd pull over and talk and everything like that. So, you know, it definitely like, you know, there's a thing about going to a place where the people know your history,
right.
You know
yes.
what I mean? And so it's a really special place for me. And it's still like that. You know, I go to the neighborhood and, you know, I talk about, you know, who who my ancestors were. And people know them, and it's great because, you know, I've lost so much of my Sugar Hill family that when I go to Sugar Hill, like, those memories are kept alive with the neighbors. So,
well, that's why. So it's still a sense of community there.
Right.
That's really outstanding that people are still having that connection, mm-hmm. connection there. So what made you or decide to run for the TUSD governing board?
Yeah, what made me run? Well, I mean, a lot of reasons made me run. I was originally asked by Pastor Grady Scott if I would be interested in running. He's
at Grace Temple, right?
Over I believe
Grace
so, Temple. Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Pastor Grace Temple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't know him before, but he saw me speaking at the League of Women Voters Issues and Aches breakfast. I was speaking on the panel there. And yeah, he approached me and kind of, you know, said that he and like the members of the IMA have been looking for a potential candidate, a Black candidate to run for school board because, you know, TUSD serves a lot of Black students. I think maybe the most in Tucson, most likely. TUSD serves around 4,500 Black students, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's definitely a need for representation in leadership in TUSD because it's been a long time since we've had Black governing board member. We've only had one.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
In more than 100 years. So.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. So, mm-hmm. You mentioned the IMA, the Interfaith Ministerial Alliance.
Right.
So it sounds like they are supporting Sadie Shaw.
I also. Yeah. I think
they are. Yeah. So you are a parent.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, if I didn't have a daughter in the district, I definitely would not consider running. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people who do run for TUSD governing board that don't have kids in the district. And, you know, they have good reasons for running. But, like, I think having more skin in the game and having, like, it be, like, a personal, you know, it's personal for me to have the school district do well because mm-hmm. it affects my daughter. It's affected my family. My dad went to TUSD school district. So did my mom. And so, you know, I just want to see it improve because there's a lot of people that get left behind that aren't getting educated. And so, you know, we need to figure out a solution to mm-hmm. that.
So tell us, what would you like to see happen in TUSD and what do you see as the needs at TUSD?
You know, TUSD has a lot of problems. For me, like, my biggest concern going into it was getting the art program strengthened. When I enrolled my daughter in Monzo Elementary, I didn't realize that they did not have an art program or a music program or, you know, even a PE class. And so I started out kind of just asking around, like, why is this? They had the infrastructure. They had an art class in the past, but of course, with budget cuts, that's one of the first things that went. And so, yeah, you know, bringing the arts back, making sure that every student gets a full program of what they need, not just math, science, English, language arts, but music, art, and anything to get them like a full holistic education. But other than that, you know, we have a real problem with academic achievement in TUSD. Mm-hmm. And so that's big on my list, too.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, like a lot of schools and school districts, some of the first things to go are the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame.
Right.
So, well, you know, it's good to see that you're one of the things you want to do is see the arts come back into right. the school district.
Right.
And also, you know, the TUSD, my daughter, she graduated from TUSD. Well, actually my son and daughter, but that was a long time ago. But even then, you know, they were having some right. issues. So it would be great to see, and especially see some representation or some diversity on the governing board.
Right.
And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's what diversity is all about, bringing in fresh ideas, new ideas, and having a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that you are also seem to bring in some youth to right. it. And that's probably important, too. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't think I'll be the youngest governing board member if I get elected. But, you know, I certainly think that I am me and the students, like, you know, it's almost like we're we're kin. Of course, I'm you know, I'm getting up there in age, but I think it is important because I still kind of remember what it was like to be in high school. You know what I mean? And I certainly know how much of a struggle it is just growing up and being young and like feeling powerless. And so I want to like show kids that like, hey, you can get a lot done in school and you could change the world while you're going through K through 12. You just have to like have direction, find a mentor, mm-hmm. and then just, you know, get all your ducks in a row, as they say.
Well, it'll be great to have some fresh ideas mm-hmm. on the governing board.
Right.
Okay, so you talked about the fine arts and music and art back into the school district and into the curriculum. How does that help? I mean, right now, I guess the district's focus is on the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. So how is that going to help and expand the education, the fine arts, and bringing that back into the curriculum across the school district?
Mm-hmm. Good question. You know, the arts are kind of where humans began to get sophisticated. Like before we had science or anything like that, math, we started to like draw or mold things with clay, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it's like a primordial thing that all people should dabble in and, mm-hmm. and just use as a tool to either, you know, decompress or make something beautiful or just express themselves. And so in school, we know that it improves not only like their scores in math and science, but you know, it makes something that you can be engaged in. So I think it can prevent burnout, which I know a lot of mm-hmm. kids, especially the older kids, get burnt out with all of the, like you said, the three R's that get like, you know, bashed in their heads so often mm-hmm. now. And if they have no break with the arts or with music or even with PE, then they'll, when someone gets burnt out, they start to detach themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big problem we have today in schools is that kids are not engaged and they're so much not engaged that they just stop caring. Mm-hmm. And so I think by bringing the arts back, we can almost reactivate anybody as long as we can find that, well, every person has something that they're more interested in, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm,
so,
yeah.
Some like personally, like I like painting, performance, installation, dance, but I know other people prefer printmaking mm-hmm. or sculpting or something like that. So I think we really need to have arts programs that are like wide and have a lot of variety in them so that people can figure out what it is that they are good at and that they like to do.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's like something to look forward to also during right. the day. You know, mm-hmm. some kids look forward to music, some look forward to art or PE or something that they look right. forward to in a day instead of the mm-hmm. same old.
Exactly.
Yeah
makes some sense. Kind of creative.
Yeah that creative just, outlet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Some right-bearing kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even mm-hmm. cooking is an art.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
Culinary art. So
I like to think, think it's an art.
Absolutely. I agree with this. Yeah. It is definitely an art.
Right. I mean, it's an artist release. And yeah, I think that's probably would relieve some of the stress that the kids have, especially exactly. during this time.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like, you know, back in the day, decades ago, like high schools, middle schools, they had like all these things that were skill based that we need, that we see now that young people are lacking. They don't know how to cook for themselves.
Yeah.
They can't keep a home. I mean, right. I'm guilty of some of these things. And so, yeah, like all these programs that were like, you know, electives, they were important to like maturing adults. And so we cut all of those. And now we wonder like why there's all these like
right.
people that mm-hmm. you know,
can't cook and can't fix anything.
So
I'm dating myself, but when I was going to high school in the 70s, in junior high school, we had shop class,
right.
you had metal, you had woodworking,
right.
we had home economics, you had all of these different skills that you could learn in junior high and high school.
Right.
And when you came out, you had some basic skills as to how to do things. And like I said, we even had home ec and where you learn how to do some basic things around the house and cook. And you had, you know, it was not only for girls, it was for boys too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're there, we're baking cakes and learn how to cook. But you're right. Those things have all been eliminated from the curriculum.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would be great to get some of those things back, but it's lacking in those skills. I just recently taught a class to some Raytheon employees. We had a Zoom class, and it was a cooking class because, you know, they're all stuck at home, can't go out to eat, and like once a month or so, they are getting different people from restaurants and others to host a class on Zoom to teach them how to cook at home. So,
that's really cool.
Yeah, right. But, you know, the reason being is they didn't get that training coming up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So really, I like I said before, I'm really excited about your platform and the things that you're trying to and the ways that you're trying to help the school district. Mm-hmm. And I you know, I want to say thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it's time for us to take a break. We're here today with Sadie Shaw, community activist and candidate for the TUSD Governing Board. We'll see you in a few. Welcome back to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast. I'm here with the doctor.
Hello, hello.
Yes, and we are blessed with the presence of Sadie Shaw, woo-hoo! Community activist here in Tucson, and she is running for the TUSD Governing Board. Again, we appreciate you being here. So one of the things I wanted to ask is about, and I don't know what they're calling it these days, but it's been Black studies, it's been ethnic studies, and I don't know what the term is for it now, but really it's the study of African-American history in the district.
Right.
And because our history is kind of absent in what's called American history. So, but anyway, what are your views on this whole ethnic studies, Black studies, or whatever you want to call it, or whatever it's called today in the district?
Yeah, I am absolutely in support of ethnic studies in the district. And, you know, TUSD has a sordid history in regards to kind of creating, I guess, conditions where kids feel comfortable and have access to their own history. You know, back in like 2012, when the governing board eliminated the Mexican American Studies program, and it you know, became national news.
Wow.
And, you know, current former board members were even like, put on the Daily Show. They did this whole interview, you know.
Wow.
How they have
right, yeah,
fake interviews, but like, yeah, one of the people on the interview, and he didn't realize that it was kind of like a satire piece, and he said the most racist, vile stuff I have heard. And
oh,
he was a governing board member. He said something that Africans are even less than 3/5.
Wow.
In his mind. Yeah, look up that clip. But I mean, that's just like an example of how like TUSD has really done a disservice to a lot of its students. And so nowadays they're calling it culturally relevant curriculum. And they're trying to kind of make a more politically correct, I mean, it's not politically correct in some people's eyes, but they have these classes that you can elect to take. Some are based on like Mexican American studies. Some are based in African American studies. But my issue with that is that those are things you have to want to take to learn it. And I feel that all curriculum, all of the district curriculum needs an update, because we know all of the myths that were taught from kindergarten to 12th grade about Thanksgiving and, you know, how the Native Americans were treated well. Well, we all know as we get older, it's little bits and pieces of the real story come through, but it's not enough. Like, I personally feel like I would have benefited greatly from not starting the history out for my people in slavery, but in Africa. You know, if we had been taught that, like, before we were enslaved, we were kings and queens, and it was really like the beginning of civilization in Africa. And, you know, we taught the whole world all of our knowledge, and then they spread it, you know, around. And you know, that history is, it's obscured from us because, you know, we live in a colony. This is a colonial society. And so they don't want us to, you know, feel like, hey, we had a past before all of this happened. And so, you know, I want all history to come not in the perspective of the colonizer. I think we need to have, like, it's 2020. We have to have like a world history that is, you know, tells the truth about what happened and the consequences. And that's why we are in this crazy situation of today, because all these powers, like, they want to keep on to that power, you know, and knowledge is power. And so that's why, you know, we have are made to believe certain things. And so,
you know, the history, our history, though, the history that's taught in the classroom is more or less history without context.
Right.
It's points in time without context. Yep. And every little thing, like you say, the settlers went out west and they settled the West. Right. But no context, then it doesn't tell you what happened to all of the Native Americans that were there already in the West.
Right.
That's history without context.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's taught that. And so therefore, you know, what you're talking about, what they're taught about slavery, what they're talking about freeing the slaves and, you know, none of it has context.
Right.
And therefore, what's not there are all the atrocities, which is a shame. So everybody's taught this watered down, generic thing called American history.
Yep. And an example is, you know, we all, I don't know if you all got, remember being taught about like George Washington's wooden teeth, but come to find out that those teeth weren't wooden. They were made out of his slave's teeth. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So anyway, so you what you're saying is that it's not so much that we need ethics studies. We just need the real history taught with the real context of what was going on at the time and how things really transpired.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm down for both because I realize that like updating the entire district curriculum is going to be a task, you know, and it might take a good amount of time. But I think that certainly expanding the ethnic studies program, expanding the culturally relevant curriculum, buying more textbooks, because right now, I mean, they have like, I'm not sure the exact number, but I think it's around like 5,000 books that are for the culturally relevant curriculum. But, you know, TUSD serves around 45,000 students. So that really doesn't put a dent into all of the need that's there. So I would definitely start by, you know, buying more books, having it be more available, because if you don't have the textbooks, then the teachers can't teach. And a lot of the times a teacher might want to, you know, teach a certain book, but it is, you know, being used by another school or another class. So
So I just heard from a friend of mine that TUSD is talking about opening up the campus for school, that bringing the students back into school, and this whole COVID thing is still going on. How do you feel about bringing students back for in the classroom teaching at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm torn between it. For one, I do think that there is a need. Like, we already have students learning at school, the at-risk students. And I do realize that a lot of parents have to work throughout the day. And so, you know, it is really a challenge being able to support a family and having to help a kid through their online learning, because it is like, my daughter's in second grade and I have to be there. She asked me a question like every 15 minutes or less, you know what I mean? And so, I mean, I do think we should have an option available for people who need it or want it. But the problem with TUSD's hybrid model is that teachers are forced to go back. They're not given an option to stay remote. They have to go back to school. And a lot of TUSD teachers have been working for decades, and, you know, a lot of them have pre-existing conditions, and so they don't want to expose themselves to that. Plus, I'm not very confident that the district has been working on like making mitigation strategies in each school that are going to keep people safe. You know what I mean? And so that's the problem. They did vote that they would start the hybrid model on November 12th, but, you know, there's a lot of teachers that are going to look for other work because they're not going to put themselves at risk. And we already have a teacher shortage in the district.
Wow.
And so I know it's going to like cause a bunch of havoc because people are, there's a mass exodus at TUSD with both employees and students. And so it's going to happen more, unfortunately. And I think we could have used this as an opportunity if we kept the teachers remote, the ones who wanted to be remote. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there was a need for more teachers in school, we got to remember that not every student is going to be coming back to school. Some, right. you know, they're given the option to stay at home and be and so, you know, we could have hired like long-term subs or, mm-hmm. you know, found other teachers. Like I know I need my teaching certificate, but I probably wouldn't want to teach in school as it is now, but I know there are people who want to go back to school and teach. I think it's around like 27% of TUSD teachers who said that they would and are willing to go back. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
There's some issues and, you know, I hope that it works out okay. But, you know, TUSD still, we all know TUSD has an issue with transparency and accountability. And, you know, it's the only school district in Tucson that is not telling the school community if there's a COVID case. They're not letting you know. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's... And it's like, because they have this thing, like if there's one case or two cases that are unrelated that they don't have to like really notify anybody. They tell that the health department, but yeah.
They won't let the public and they won't let the parents or the students know.
Yeah.
So it's a gamble. Bring your kid to school.
For sure. I mean, some, they will if there was enough people in contact with them, but it's, I don't think there's enough transparency with it.
Wow.
So, but this other districts are open, you know, and we haven't had like a terrible spike like at the U of A.
Right.
You know, there hasn't been thousands of cases. So, you know, maybe it will work out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand some of the universities are considering the second semester, even though they were open first semester, the second semester is being remote. So, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, if November 12th rolls around and see what happens.
Yeah.
Right. So, this is a, show about food. So what is coming up? What has food meant to you and the family? And I mean, as you were coming up when you were young and, you know, with your mom and dad, and tell us a little bit about dinners and holidays and what do you think about that?
Yeah, food.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, my palate definitely has changed throughout my lifetime, and and you know, the ways that, you know, my family has eaten together has definitely evolved. You know, I started out and, you know, I ate pretty much whatever was put on the table in front of me. Like I ate liver and onions, and I remember that I liked it.
Really?
Back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
My dad cooked liver and onions. Yeah, a young child, so he would do all the cooking because my mom was like a night nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, I ate, you know, all kinds of stuff that I don't eat anymore. you know. But, yeah, I just remember, like, not being able to leave the table until I finish my meal.
Oh, wow.
I know. And, you know, I don't know how they did it because I certainly can't get my daughter to finish a meal. And she won't stay at the table either. Yeah.
So do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a brother.
A brother. Yeah, okay.
An older brother.
Older brother. Okay. But so your dad did most of the cooking. Did your dad do any barbecuing or anything like that? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I think he barbecued, but it was mostly like, you know, stuff in the kitchen, like I'm sure he barbecued. I know my Aunt Alice, who I lived in her house in Sugar Hill, like she did all of the like holiday cooking, and I know that like she cooked so much, like she would cook like three different meats, you know what I mean? But unfortunately, she couldn't eat any of it because she was on dialysis.
Oh no,
you know what I mean? And so, but she was a great cook.
So tell us, well, what are you doing now? It's just you and your daughter. What are you cooking now?
Oh, my God. Well, she's a very picky eater. And I guess I am, too. But, like, you know, she still eats all of those, like, kid foods, like, you know, macaroni and cheese.
Mac and cheese. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she likes beans and she eats tofu. And, yeah, I try to, like, I'm trying to expand her palate. But,
yeah,
I really messed up. I should have done it like back in the day, like when she was one, just like not give her any options.
They're right.
You know?
Here you go, liver and onions. Yeah. Here you go at one. Yeah.
And I didn't know better. Like I didn't know what a liver was. Yeah. You know? So I'm just trying to expand her palate now and get her to eat like, you know, regular food that's not like, you know, fine tuned for her. And she's starting to eat different things.
How old is she now?
She's seven.
Yeah.
Seven,
yeah.
Okay.
Fun so, age.
Yeah. I just had to tell her it's salty and then she'll try it.
Yeah. Anything salty.
Yeah.
Anything salty.
Love it.
Oh, that's great.
So tell us, how can we support you? Where can we find more information about you?
Sure. Yeah, you could definitely support me. The best way is to vote for me or tell your friends to vote for me. I'll be on the ballot if you live in TUSD, Sadie Shaw for TUSD Governing Board. But you could find out more about my platform at my website, shaw4tusd.com. I have a Facebook page and yeah, social media, pretty much everything, Instagram. I don't have a TikTok. I tried to get one, but I didn't understand it.
It is something hard to understand. Yeah. I get that. I totally get that. Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. We really appreciate you coming on the show. And we're pulling for you to be elected on the governing board. And we're excited to see, you know, what happens and what you do when you get elected.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right.
So thank you very much for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the show today. We had a great time. Next week, we have an amazing guest. We have Candace Thomas of Lightworks Acupuncture. Lightworks is 2 years running the Arizona Daily Star Reader's Choice Award winner for Best Acupuncture. Candace is going to be on the show and she's going to help us help demystify acupuncture for us and also talk about food toxicity. So tune in next week on Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast. See you next time.